And this is The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I'm your host, Julian Joiello, and Ben Starr hosting with me, as always.
Hey, Julian.
And I just love our theme song. It really brings in some consistency, you know, in the program every week. And all you listeners tuning in, you must hear that theme song and immediately think of The Positive Mind, right?
Yeah, I could have sworn that it was, maybe it was a different theme song, but was it that always the one we used?
Yeah, do you guys remember a different theme song? We actually usually play this one. One second here. We usually play this one. You remember that one?
Oh, there it is.
It brings back.
That's right.
The memories, 35 years of The Positive Mind. It's pretty great. But we all know that one. And you didn't really question it for a second that was a different... That was actually a jazz cover on the saxophone by Gleb Pachenko, who was a friend of Armand DeMille's.
But here's a question, Julian. How long would we have to play that alternate jazz theme song before everyone just started remembering it as the theme song that always was?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
Would it take a year, 5, 10 years? I mean, how long would it take before people started ingraining that memory as, well, this has just always been the theme song?
Right. It could be several years, or it could be maybe just a couple months.
Maybe never.
Or maybe never.
And that's what we want to talk about today, is the interesting and precarious nature of memory and how memories change and evolve over time, how we maybe invent memories or forget certain memories.
How you can remember things better, what affects a memory, and how perhaps something, you know, you walk into a new, like a party or dinner party, and you introduce yourself to everybody, and you hear 10 names, and within 5 seconds, you've forgotten all of the names.
Or maybe you've forgotten 9 of them, but there was one that...
That
stuck in your mind.
Right. You might remember, you know... Kehlani, because it's an interesting name. But then when you hear John, Tim, Tiffany, Jennifer, Michelle, not so much. They sort of fly away, and then they become...
Or maybe you remember the names that you're used to hearing, and the new name is hard to retain.
Absolutely. So there's 3 steps to memory.
That's right.
There's 3 stages of memory. And, you know, this is simplifying it a little bit, but when thinking of it as a sort of storage,
almost like a computer
like
hard drive.
Like a computer drive. It starts off with encoding or registration. So you receive information through your senses, then you process them and put them together and create a memory.
So that would be almost like a recording.
Right. It's kind of like recording video and sound, but you've got your senses of touch, of smell.
All your
of
5
taste.
Senses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what happens is this memory that you've just encoded, quote-unquote, we'll use that word a lot today, you put it into storage. So you create a permanent record of this encoded information. So you say, okay, I'm going to take this thing and put it in my brain in a place that will stay there.
Little filing cabinet in the back
right.
of my brain.
And then finally, there's the retrieval process. So when you need that memory, or when maybe not when you need it, but it'll come up again, and that's retrieving it. So maybe when you see a painting you remember from 10 years ago when you were at the MoMA, that memory will come flying back, how you and your friends were there, and you took a photo with it, and then you ran off.
Or sure, and it's incredible the range of things that can trigger those memories, and that can lead to the step that you call retrieval, right? The pulling that memory out. Some of you listeners may remember a few months back we did a program on smell and memory and how closely the sense of smell is tied to memory retrieval. So maybe it's the, you know, smell of a certain kind of food or the smell of a certain building. I remember there was one guy, Julian, who called us up, and he said that every time he goes into a bicycle shop, he's hit with the memory of being a kid, because as a kid, there was bicycle storage in the basement of his building. And so that smell of the stale air in the bicycle tires pulled all these memories out of him.
Right. Is there a food or a perfume that brings you back to your home when you were growing up?
Right. Maybe the perfume that your mother or grandmother wore.
Yeah, I mean, it can... Actually, this is a funny story for you. My grandmother, she was medically treating herself for her arthritis by smoking marijuana. And I remember growing up and smelling this herb, and I didn't know what it was. And I thought it was like sage or parsley. I have no idea. I was a kid. And it just reminded me of my grandma. It was this kind of like, she would try to hide it behind the kitchen or door or something like this. And then... I smelled it on the street once, and I was like, oh, it smells like my grandma. It smells like grandma out here. Where's my grandma?
Then you got to NYU, and grandma was around every corner.
Yeah, right. And then all of a sudden, my friend was like, that's not grandma. But yeah, anyway, so there's smells that are reminding you of anything. And we wanted to talk a lot about memory, just about the senses, how they kind of come back. And also, they can also disappear. There's three main ways that memories often disappear. In your short-term memory, for example, decay, which is when you don't rehearse the information. So like, let's say you get to that table of 10 people, you hear all those names, and then you never think about it again. You're going to forget most likely all those names, because of decay. What happens is if you rehearse them, you say, okay, this is Tim, John, Tiffany, Tim, John, Tiffany. You do it again half hour later, Tim, John, Tiffany, one more time, and it'll start, joining into your longer term memory, and it'll be something that you'll put together and hold on to. Then also there's something called displacement. So displacement is another way to forget. Displacement is quite literally a form of forgetting when new memories replace old ones. So we've got a lot of space for memory. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I mean, you can, you know, have a memory of, let's say, a painting, like I was mentioning before, and you can see a new painting that looks similar, and that painting will actually just start replacing the other one because it's so similar and you haven't built any difference between the two. You haven't built a way for you to look at them as separate things. And this is another way to forget.
Yeah, I want to get back to what you mentioned earlier, Julian, about the steps of memory, the stages of memory,
right,
if you will. So you gave us three stages, starting with encoding, which is the recording of the actual memory as it's happening. The storage, which is where the memory lives inside of your brain, whether it's conscious or subconscious. And then the retrieval, which is when either you need to recall a memory consciously or something happens that brings the memory out without you trying to remember.
Yeah.
And what I think is there's something that happens between the last two steps, right? Something happens between storage and retrieval that can blur some memories, that can erase some memories, or that can create and fabricate memories that never really happened. And that's something called confabulation. Very fancy word there. But confabulation is a disturbance in our memory. So it's like producing fabricated or misinterpreted memories. And it's without any kind of ill intent. It's not, you know, confabulation is not like fabrication. It's a confusion, if you will, and it's something that happens to a lot of us when we're trying to remember things. Julian, you were mentioning this experiment that was done.
Yeah, there's a really interesting experiment was done over a couple years by Marianne Gary, and she's a psychologist, and she was doing this experiment where they would show a photoshopped photo of a person with his family in a hot air balloon, and they'd never been in a hot air balloon.
So they put the kid in a balloon.
So they put the kid in this balloon.
In the picture. Only in the picture.
Right, and they say, okay, this is something you did with your family. This is your family here. You can see it right here. And they say, okay, that's kind of weird. I don't totally remember that. And then several years later, they would ask them again, let's look at this photo. Remember this hot air balloon? You remember this? You see your family there? Remember being up there in the hot air balloon? And the person, more times than not, would say, yeah, that's weird. I actually remember my father was afraid of hitting a mountain, and the fire was really hot.
Wow.
And so all of a sudden, people are actually building these memories And so what's exciting about this is that this experiment showed us that often as human beings, just by how our brain works, we build these memories in our mind and we'll actually add details to it that don't exist.
Wow. That, you know, something like that happened with me recently as I was remembering a Thanksgiving dinner with family a few years ago, and I was talking to my dad about it, and that was the only year that my dad couldn't make it to Thanksgiving dinner. And I was telling him about it. I said, yeah, no, you remember that year, and we were all together, and, you know, these people were here, and these cousins, and this aunt and uncle, and these people. And he said, no, I wasn't at Thanksgiving that year. And in the memory, you know, my dad is there, because he's always there at Thanksgiving. And yet, the more he told me about why he wasn't there, I remembered, yeah, you know, he really wasn't there. But in my memory, he was at the table.
Yeah. And actually, I have a little piece of a program that Armand did on memory we wanted to bring you. So let's just bring this up in just a moment. It's about confabulation and this idea of memory sort of coming out of nowhere.
Well, here's what Joseph Ledoux found. He found that all memories are not solid. That a memory is only as fresh as the last time you remembered it. Basically, in effect, he was saying every time you recall the memory and you think about it and you talk about it, that's the way it becomes as opposed to the way it really was. Do we really remember these facts out of childhood? I have a good example of that. I remember I was with my two sisters. I have two sisters. One is older and one is younger. And I'm with my two sisters one day, and my older sister says, oh, remember that terrible time I hit you over the head with a milk bottle? When I was a boy, she said, you were like 3 or 4 years old, and the milkman delivered milk in a bottle, and I hit you over the head with the bottle. And my younger sister said, that didn't happen. She said, that never happened. She said, he picked up the bottle, and he broke the bottle of milk. And then we said, well, what's the true memory? Of course, if you had hit a little boy over the head with a bottle of milk, the little boy wouldn't be here now. So, but the way she looked at me and she said, you know, I think that's the way I remembered it. And I have to look back on my own memories. There are many memories I have which were created. I mean, things that never happened that I remember as being real. A man I know tells a story about how as a kid, he had two scars on his arms. They were like birth defects. And he would tell the story about how he was up in camp and he would get these ticks. These bugs would go on his arm. He said, and one time a tick went on my arm and it burrowed itself under my flesh. And it crawled all the way out to the other side. And that he said what they wanted to do, the doctors, to get rid of that tick is they poured gunpowder on the wound where the tick went in. And then they lit the gunpowder and it forced the tick to come out on this other side of his skin where the other mark was. He believed for years that the two scars on his arm were caused by ticks that were treated with burning gunpowder. We see he told the story so often, it became real. How many of your memories are real? How many of them are just bringing back something and then changing it a little bit and changing it a little bit and changing it a little bit? It's hard to know what you remember is real. Yet we know we remember. But what is right? What is not right? A memory from childhood. You could check it out. You could ask people about it. It's very difficult to maintain because each time you tell the story, it becomes a new memory. This he proved kind of chemically. He showed the way protein synthesis happens. And therefore, the proof is if you're somebody who broods over the past, if you're somebody who talks about your past over and over again, if you're depressed and you keep talking about what you were like and how it was and what I was like when I was 16 and what I was like when I was 23. You know, I was the same way 14 years ago that I am now. Well, maybe you're creating the same way.
Armand DeMille talking about memory retrieval and recall, and how, you know, there's an interesting thing in that piece, Julian. Armand mentions each time you recall the memory, it almost becomes a new memory because you have to almost recreate it within the story that you're telling.
Right. It's a bit of a snowball effect. Like, it's going on, you keep adding snow,
sure.
It's getting bigger and bigger, and this, you know, I don't know, it's not fake snow, but, you know, it sort of keeps growing on itself.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to, we were discussing the three stages of memory, and there's something that happens, like I said, there's something that happens between storage and retrieval, and that's basically, in so many words, what Armand mentioned when he said, every time you recall the memory, it becomes new. I want to mention just a phenomenon that Julian and I were discussing. This is very interesting to me. And if you grew up learning how to read any time between the 1970s and the 1990s, you may remember a series of children's books about a family of bears. Many, many, many millions of children read these books. Now, what happened, and I'm not saying the name of the series just yet on purpose. What happened is that a few years ago, someone dug up his copies of these old children's books, and he found that the spelling was completely different than what he remembered it. Julian, do you know the family of bears I'm talking about?
Is it the Bernstein Bears?
Yeah, the Bernstein, Berenstein.
The Bernstein, the Berenstein.
Berenstein, Berenstein.
Berenstein? I don't know.
Well, and millions of people remember it as the Bernstein Bears, S-T-E-I-N. But it turns out that it was Berenstein all along.
Berenstein. Now, I was actually under the impression that it was B-E-R-N-S-T-E-I-N, Bernstein. That's
Bernstein,
how
that's
it.
How I recall it. I read the books as a kid myself, but it's actually Berenstain.
Now, I think there's probably a couple people out there saying, why are you guys so excited about this? That's not that weird. I know what it was called. But most of us, maybe 95%, the reason this is a phenomenon is because
millions of people remember
millions
it with
of people.
The E. And now it turns out that it's spelled with an A, and it was always spelled with an A.
And this is called the Mandela effect, because what happened is actually Nelson Mandela, a lot of people had the memory, this idea that Nelson Mandela died before when he actually died, which
right.
is in 2013.
He died a couple years ago, and tons of people said, wait, I thought he had already passed away.
Right. And so this is an interesting thing we want to talk about, because it ties back to
confabulation, but on a massive scale.
And it's by millions of people. So you would ask your friend, is it Bernstein Bears? Yeah, it is. Yeah. And you ask your mom, is it Bernstein Bears? Yeah. And you ask somebody in France who has the Bernstein Bears, you know, it's the Bernstein Bears. Yeah, that's what it is. And it's millions of people. It's
now,
not
this
just
is such
you.
A phenomenon, Julian, that people online started coming up with conspiracy theories of alternate universes and time travel. And I'm not saying that that's impossible, but I'm saying it's a lot more likely that we all have confabulated or misremembered or, you know, sort of created an alternate memory ourselves. But it's very compelling stuff, and it's very strange that, you know, millions of people share this so-called confabulation.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's exciting, and we love talking about this memory stuff today. It's actually 1:20 p.m. here in New York City. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM and The Positive Mind. And stay tuned. We're talking more about this confabulation, more about the Mandela effect.
Yeah, I want to hear from our listeners if you have memories that you feel you remember in a way that either didn't happen or having recalled the memory so many times changed it. Or what do you remember about the Bernstein Bears? You know, do you remember it as an E or an A?
Right.
I want to hear from our listeners about their experience with memory recall and what happens between, you know, that storage
yeah.
point and retrieval point.
And, you know, I mean, it's interesting because you think about memory and it's the only way we remember. It's the only way we remember what happened in the past to us in a personal way. So the memories consist of us... our perceptions, our sensorial,
sense of self, even.
Right, perceptions. So when somebody, let's say, drinks alcohol all night and blacks out and you don't remember the day before, that feeling of waking up and being in total shock that, it feels like something hasn't happened to you because you don't remember it.
You pretty familiar with that feeling, Julian?
Not at all. It's from friends friends telling me about what that's like. Let's hear from you guys. 212-757-5555 is our number. 212-757-5555 is our call-in number. We'd love to hear about what your experience is with memory. Have you found that something that you experienced, let's say when you were 4 years old, you know, there's this very, very, very clear memory of you maybe falling down the stairs or eating a certain kind of food with your family or going to a place, a hot air balloon perhaps, and then when you were 25, you realized, wait, this never happened.
Yeah, I mean, and adding to what you said earlier, Julian, about memories and how, you know, how we define them, I would say that in some ways, the sum total of our lived experience and memories kind of create our own self-image and self-identity of who we are.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if you take someone and erase all their memories, right, like the way you might erase files off of a hard drive on a computer, if you were to erase someone's entire memory and all you left them with was the ability to speak, read, and write, are they still the same person? I mean, Is part of who we are dictated by the sum total of our memories? I don't know. I think it's worth exploring. But let's take a call. We have Robert on the line. Robert, you're on The Positive Mind.
Hi, how are you? So here's my story. I was 16 or 17 years old. I was working in a deli. And there was a specific song on the radio when a little incident happened where I cut my finger on a slicing machine. And it wasn't terrible, so, you know, it was just a little bit of the tip of my finger got caught in it. But the song, anytime it comes up, I can remember that the air conditioning wasn't working in the deli, that everything was hot and humid, and the cold cuts were slippery, and I just remember the whole entire incident, and that one song was playing, and I don't know why I remember the song, but every time that song's on, I remember the whole incident.
Robert, it's incredible that you say that, because today we were debating whether to go with this subject or the subject of how music and memory are tied. What was the name of the song?
It was Like a Prayer by Madonna.
Wow.
Wow. And so when you hear that song, does it sort of bring you back to a little bit of that place when you slice your finger, the pain that comes along with it, or is it just sort of like a distant memory?
It's a distant memory, but it's a vivid memory. Like every single thing that was happening at that moment is like ingrained in my brain.
Sure. I think music, after a sense of smell, may be one of the most powerful triggers of old memories. It brings them right back, puts you right back in a time and place.
Yeah, I know that when I listen to a song that I listened to maybe 4 or 5 years ago when I was in college, you know, it reminds me very much of the it's almost interesting how that music will bring back the feeling in your body that you had at that age, in that time. That's sort of related to nostalgia, and it's exciting. I love that feeling personally, and I know a lot of people do.
And this was 24 years ago, so...
Wow. Yeah, so it can really last for a long time. It can really bring you back.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thank you so much for sharing with us, Robert, today. Yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. You're tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Julian Joiello. We're talking about memory, encoding, storage, and retrieval. The concept of remembering something, and each time you remember it, is it really a crystal clear memory? Lossless, if you will, as pulling up a file on a computer.
Yeah, and also, should you trust this memory as fact?
Right.
Is it fact? I mean, probably not. There's probably one detail, you know, that red dress that you remember so well at your birthday when you were 6. Maybe it was orange.
Let's take another call. Carol, you're on the line. How you doing, Carol?
I'm wonderful, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. I'm so glad for... Robert's call, because I was wondering how you weren't mentioning the sense of sound in terms of evoking memory, because it's always a song that does it for me. I grew up in a family where we didn't speak a lot. We didn't take a lot of photographs, but a song always brings back memories for me. When I hear a song, I always try to remember, try to find out what year it was that that song came out and how old I was.
Yeah, I know exactly
the
feeling.
All the memories come up.
Absolutely.
I can't say what I learned from the memory, but a song always does it for me, you know.
Yeah,
a song and I say, what song did that song come out? And then I remember, try to remember what age I was, where I was. It's always a song that does it for me, not a smell, not a, you know, it's always a song.
Sure, and everybody's you know, memory triggers can be different, and I definitely share that with you, Carol, is that for me, music takes me right back to a time and place, you know. And we're coming up to our break in about 5 minutes, Carol, and when we play, we're going to play a song that we've already chosen for today, but I know the last time we played a song by this artist, that you really were into it, so I think you may you may recognize the song, and it may or may not bring you back to a time and place.
Yeah, and that feeling is great. Is there a song that really brings you to, let's say, an emotional place, that's an emotional state that's different than the one you're feeling right now? Like, if you played this song, it would really pull you back into another era.
You know what? What song? I can't remember this song. The specific song, but I remember a song, and when I do my research and see what year it came out, I would have been about probably 3 years old, but I remember it's the first and only time my dad ever beat me, ever spanked me, and I peed myself, and but from I can remember, I've always grown up hearing music playing in my household. My father loved music, and I thank him for that, for instilling that love for music. Music always played in my home. Whenever the TV turned off, the stereo was always playing. If my father came home and he didn't hear the music playing, he would ask, "Something is wrong with the radio. Why is the music not on?"
Yeah, I grew up in a similar household where music was constantly around.
I'm so glad for that, because my love for music, and that is what keeps me going. It's like Bob Marley says, when the music hits, you feel no pain.
I love that. I love that. Trenchtown Rock.
Yeah, when the music hits, you really feel no pain, you know. So music is what does it for me. Music brings back so many memories. When I hear a certain song, I say, that brings back so much memory.
Right, and they can connect you to both, you know, beautiful memories and also strong ones, too.
Yes.
Yeah. I know as an actor, a lot of people, when going into an emotional scene, will put music, and they have that one song that really brings them to an emotional place.
Yeah.
And they try not to play it too often because they wear it out.
Yeah.
But they want that, you know, that song that brings them back to, you know, that moment that you were talking about when you were three. Or, you know, the moment when, you know, you were 10 years old and everything you always wanted was, you know, pulled away from you. Maybe you lost the job that you always wanted, whatever.
Yeah.
Not 10, maybe, but 18.
But it's always the music that does it for
it really is. Yeah, I agree.
Not,
I agree with music
smell,
for myself, for sure.
It's music.
Yeah.
Well, Carol, I'm really glad to know that you're listening today, because I think you will probably recognize the song that we've chosen for the break music, and it's always great to hear from you, Carol.
Same here.
Thank you, Carol, for calling in.
Thank you. Take care.
You too, Carol. 212-757-5555 is the number to call. You're tuned into 99.5 FM WBAI. We're going to take a short musical break. When we get back, we'll continue taking your phone calls. Julian, it's great to be here today. I can't remember the last time we had such a good time.
Really? I can't. It was last week.
Oh, that's right.
It was last week.
That's
Ben.
Right.
Come
just
on.
Last Wednesday.
Come on, your memory. You got to work on that short-term memory. You got to start making sure that you rehearse your memories, and then you go over it again. And actually, we're going to talk a little bit more about how sleep is really beneficial to choosing which memories are correct and useful for you and which ones are not.
Absolutely.
And kind of throwing those away. So we'll talk more about that after the break and take more of your phone calls. I'm Julian and Ben in the studio here at WBAI 99.5 FM. Here's a little bit of music.
There you are, you're taking true love, and while you're taking
Marley and the Wailers with Stand Alone. Great track from the pre-Island record years. That's why it sounds like...
A little bit of vinyl coming your way through the radio waves.
It's a classic.
Yeah, and you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM, as we've said, the positive mind here in New York City on this hot, back-to-hot summer day. And we've got Sabrina on the line. Sabrina?
Hi.
Hi, how's it going? Do you have any memories that you feel like? What's your opinion on all this that's happening today?
Well, first, I just want to say that I remember the Berenstain Bears with an E, and I think the whole thing is, like, really crazy and weird that so many people remember it like that.
Have you heard of that story before we mentioned it today?
Yeah, that's what actually made me, like, stop on your radio station. I was just flipping through the channels, and I heard you guys talking about it, and I thought I wanted to hear what other people were saying.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I mean, a lot of people remember it the way you do and the way I do, spelled with an E. And yet, if you have the book still, when you go back and look at them, it's spelled with an A. And it's really weird. And it's
really strange.
Really strange. And it's, I mean, look, I don't know if it's an example of a level of mass sort of misremembering on a massive scale, but... We had mentioned the concept of confabulation. Is it possible that an entire generation of young readers completely misremembered, or was it E back then? I mean, who knows?
Yeah, it's really weird. I had another story, actually, that I really, I don't know, years ago, this movie called All About Steve came out. And I remember, like, seeing commercials for it, like, a week before it was supposed to come out in theaters. And I was like, I swear that this movie has been out for years. Like, I swear I saw trailers for this movie years ago. And it was just, like, it was about to come out. And it really kind of freaked me out. I was like, I swear.
You're like, I know that this came out several years ago, so why is this coming out again?
I mean, I know Hollywood got to the point where it's just formulaic and predictable with the same people, but come on, right?
Yeah, well, I was watching the Hulk, and then all of a sudden another Hulk came out. I was watching Spider-Man, and another Spider-Man came. That's actually happened. So, but I mean, it's that's really interesting because it's almost like this glitch in your system. And I wanted to talk too about how our brains are a lot like computers, and mm-hmm. A lot of scientists have been trying to understand how much storage we have in our brain, and it's something like 2.5 petabytes. Now, if anybody's a nerd like me, 2.5 petabytes means a million gigabytes. And if you don't know what a gigabyte is, that's like a full movie.
Wait, so a petabyte is a million gigabytes?
Right.
Wow.
Well, 2.5 petabytes.
Oh, okay.
It's so much more than any computer has, maybe only the biggest supercomputer at Google. And that's how much storage our brain has, theoretically, if we were to turn it into a hard drive on a computer. And what's really interesting is that our brain can hold, they say an equivalent of 300 years of television. So you'd have to watch television for 300 years. First of all, you'd also have to live to 300 years to watch television your entire life to fill your brain with all those memories. And so
TV hasn't even existed for 300 years.
Right, exactly. It's only going to be people in, like, you know, 2200 that are going to be year 2200. But we have all this storage space But I think as human beings, we don't know how to organize it well enough to use it like we do a computer. And then we get these glitches like All About Steve.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is crazy. Yeah.
Well, Sabrina, thanks for the call. I'm glad I'm not the only one who remembers it as an E and not an A. But
I know, and I'm still like, oh, I didn't even know there was an E in the beginning. I thought it was Bernstein.
Yeah, well, apparently it was Berenstain all along, and we're all just confabulating.
I don't like that as much. I don't know. There's something about that that just sounds weird.
Yeah.
Berenstain.
Well, Sabrina, thanks again for the call. Have a great rest of your afternoon.
Yeah.
You
thanks for tuning in. Yeah.
All right, bye.
Bye now. 212-757-5555. We want to hear about your confabulation stories, your memory retrieval. Is there memories that, you know, you have trouble really remembering whether or not it's a real memory or it's something that at some point you confabulated? Or, you know, there's the flip side of that, which is as a coping mechanism, you know, many of us have learned how to suppress or even forget some traumatic memories as a way to better deal with it. And the first time that that became a known phenomenon was shortly after World War I, when post-traumatic stress disorder really came to the forefront. At the time, they called it shell shock. These are soldiers returning from the war who were having memory problems, and they were actually forgetting entire memories as a coping mechanism to better deal with traumatic experiences. Let's take another call. Donna Marie, you're on WBAI. How you doing?
Hi, guys. I'm well. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Anytime. So do you have any personal experiences around confabulating and memory retrieval?
I sure do. I remember when I was younger that there was my brother fell out of a car, and I remember everything surrounding that event, and my parents said I was not there. I remember the dress my mother had on. I remember her fixing her hair, and I remember her saying to my dad, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? I remember when the scratch on his face, I remember his response, and my parents were like, you were not there.
So the event really did happen, right?
It did happen.
Your brother fell out of a car.
And they agree with everything, with what she had on, the sequence of events, you know, how everything was in that moment. And as far as they were concerned, I was not there.
And yet you were not there. So that's really interesting. So maybe you heard the story so many times that it became like a real memory.
Well, that's one of the things that we explored. But my story began before their story did.
So,
I think they just forgot I was there. That's what I think.
So maybe you're not confabulating. Maybe they're forgetting.
I think they're confabulating.
Maybe they're confabulating.
Maybe they've been telling each other that you weren't there, and then all of a sudden that became their memory.
Who's confabulating who here?
Right, yeah. It should be a game show.
Maybe I existed in another dimension. That's possible also, but They up until this day, and like I said, my story began before theirs did.
So you're saying you have details about the story that they don't?
Well, that they never mentioned until I gave the story.
Okay, that's incredible. Yeah.
Do you think that perhaps you gave them some details that they didn't remember, and now they thought that they remembered them because you told them?
Well, yeah, the Paula suggestion also was,
so that's like a reverse confabulation.
It's as clear as day to me, and it has been for as long as I can remember.
Well, let me ask you a question. How old were you when your brother fell out of the car?
I was 6, and he was 5.
And he was 5?
Yes.
Okay.
And the door, I was in the car with them, and when he fell out, they went back to the home for my mom, for them to prepare to take him to the hospital, because we grew up in a very, very rural area.
Yeah, it's also...
I'm sorry?
It's also possible that your parents may have been in a lot of shock with the fact that your brother had fallen out of the car. Their 5-year-old son had fallen out of this car, and they're sitting there saying, I need to save my son.
Right, that would be
and
traumatic for any
you being
parent.
There really is not something they're worrying about. They're really worrying about the survival of your son.
Which is the hard part within itself, because even up until now, you know, God, they won't even admit that there's a possibility that they don't remember me being in, you know, there. Because that would also mean that they kind of forgot about me. They would have to admit to that.
Oh, no.
But go ahead.
So, Donna Marie, you think the likely scenario is that you were there, you witnessed the whole thing, and that your parents were just so stressed out that they've sort of suppressed the memory of your presence.
And refused to admit to the fact that they forgot I was there.
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah,
I feel like family is probably the ultimate memory destroyer because family comes out and then your brother says, well, no, you were there. And then dad says, well, I don't know about that. And then mom says, well, I don't think anybody was there. And all of a sudden, nobody knows which one's true. And it's everybody for themselves. And then over time, you finally agree on one memory to remember. And that's how everybody has to remember it because the family said this is how it goes.
Maybe the simplest thing is to just have everyone agree that it actually happened.
Yeah, maybe just hang on to that.
Our own truth is what it came down to. Everyone had their own story of and how they recall the event, and we just, I've accepted my part. I've accepted the part that they won't accept my part, and I think that's what it is. But listening to your program, that was the first thing that came back to me, because for years we had gone over it, and then I think we just came to a point where we were just, you know, forget about it.
Well, thank you so much for the call and for sharing that story with us.
Yes, yeah, it's absolutely. It's a pleasure listening to you guys.
Yeah, thank you, Donna Marie, and keep
welcome.
Tuning in. Bye-bye.
212-757-5555. Love to hear more of your stories about confabulation, memory. Is it a created memory? Is it, you know, confabulation does not have an ill intent to it. It's not about being deceptive or about being dishonest. It's just something that we naturally do that happens, that, you know, our memories are not necessarily stored in our brains the way that a file is stored on a computer and can just be recalled, right? It's a little loose, if you will. There's some give to it. It's not necessarily a concrete thing. So, you know, the memory can morph and change over time as we recall it, or as it sits back in that filing cabinet in the back of our brain collecting dust.
Right.
Collecting,
there's probably very few memories that we have that are exactly how they happened.
Yeah.
Most of it ends up becoming, oh, well, you know, I didn't like this memory, so it was actually much darker than it really was. Or, you know, something happened, maybe someone hit me, but it wasn't that. There, you just had an argument. And anyways, we have a caller here, JJ from the East Village. And I'm from the East Village, too. So, hey, JJ, I think I remember you from the East Village. Or I don't know. How's it going?
Hey, Julian. Hey, Ben.
How you doing, JJ?
Gentlemen, I am well. I want to talk about the Berenstain Bears. But before I do that, the previous caller, seems like there could be some issues there. First off, that one child falls out of the car, and then they don't know the other child's even there. And what about just the fact that they let the first child fall out of the car in the first place? I must say that the caller seems like she's pretty together, considering how much she's been through. So I'd like to give props to the previous caller and being able to joke and laugh about neglectful parents like that, because that's what's going to get you through life.
So sure.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. JJ, what about the Bears?
About the getting back to the Berenstain Bears. Yes, I do remember that children's series very clearly. I raised a child in the 1990s. I was a dad back then, and now she's a grown adult. And yes, we read the Berenstain Bears, and I knew that it was Berenstain. Because, you know, you when you're reading to the child, they're picking up the words, and so as the reader, you want to know that they're reading the right words, and even if you have to read those words over and over again, as is the case with a lot of children's books. And then the other reason I know that it was the Berenstain is because I wanted it to be the Berenstain Bears, because I thought it'd be funny to have a Jewish bear lead character in a book. But no, in fact, it was Berenstain Bears.
So how do you remember that spelling, JJ?
Oh, well, I knew that it certainly wasn't Berenstain.
It was not Berenstain.
Not Berenstain. No. But is it S-T-A-I-N or S-T-E-I-N?
A.
In your memories, it was always A.
Well, I fortunately, I don't think about that book anymore. You know, I've moved on to other forms of literature.
Absolutely.
And I'm pleased with that. No, these children's books have their place. One thing, because while we're talking about children's books, well, I guess it's off topic, so I'm actually not going to go there. But let's talk about memories. And I think another thing that's connected with memories, besides, I know people are touching on music, but food as well, too.
Oh, yeah, big
absolutely,
time.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially with traveling, when you have all the different kinds of food you try on a trip somewhere else, you might say, oh, this truffle pizza I had in Italy is like brings me right back to Rome. You know what I mean?
Or home cooking, right? The food that a parent might have prepared as, you know, when you were growing up, and the smell and taste that's associated with that memory.
Yeah.
I'll talk about both those examples, gentlemen. First off, when you're traveling with food, a good example is Anderson split pea soup. When you're traveling out to California, you see all the signs for it from miles away, and then there's that split pea soup, and especially as a vegetarian on the road, it's important to find you know, non-meat options, but also speaking about that, and the food in particular, but the home cooking, like Ben just alluded to as well, too. There's this community resource in the East Village called the 4th Street Food Co-op, and oftentimes people gather there of all different ages and backgrounds, and they talk about memories over food and can compare recipes because all the things are right there in bulk and everything. So there's lots of communication about it and people bringing back memories. And I'd also like to thank you, gentlemen, for doing such a good show. And I do enjoy listening.
Thank you,
every week.
JJ. Thanks for the call. So just to confirm, we're going to chalk you up in the column for Berenstain with an A, right?
I had to read that book so many times, and I am grammar specific and spelling aware.
Okay, great. So that's good to know that we're not living in an alternate reality, that it's just a...
One point for JJ and zero for the world, I think, because you happen to be one of the few people. So congratulations. That's actually amazing. I'm very excited to meet someone who doesn't think of it as Steen or Berenstain or Beren. Berenstain is the name.
And life goes on, gentlemen.
Yes,
life
thank you so
on.
Much
Thanks
for calling,
again.
JJ.
My pleasure.
All right, take care.
Got time for a couple more calls. What do you say?
Yeah, let's get a couple more calls. We got 10 more minutes here on The Positive Mind. We're talking about memory, confabulation, and all the stuff in between. I want to talk a little bit about also, just for those people wondering how to remember things more succinctly, power naps are proven to produce a significant improvement in memory performance. According to the University of Saarland in Germany, psychologists have shown that a short nap lasting about an hour can significantly improve memory performance. So if you're trying to remember a script or family names or anything you're trying to learn, maybe for a test or for something like that, take a nap right after you've practiced a couple times.
Yeah,
and
Julian, my problem is that if I go to sleep for an hour, I don't know if I'll be able to wake up after an hour, you know? If I go to sleep, that's it. I'm asleep. So I love, as much as I love napping, just over this past holiday weekend, I decided to take an hour nap, and I wound up sleeping for three. So, yeah, I think power naps are great if you can wake yourself up. But, you know, it's interesting, Julian. You'd mentioned, are we taking another call? We are. Okay, well, yeah, so the idea of power napping to recall memory is great, but we talked a lot about technology these last few weeks,
right?
And I think that in a way technology has disincentivized us from having to remember things, right? Because now you don't have to really know anyone's phone number except your own, because you give it out. Everyone else's number you have saved in a phone.
Right. I remember growing up, I knew maybe 20, 30 phone numbers by heart. All the important people, best friends,
sure,
family members' cell phone, family members' home phone. And so if I lose my cell phone, I still have those ones, but the rest of them, any of the new people I've met after since I was 12 years old, I don't know any of their phone numbers, and I wouldn't be able to contact them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually have
time
James,
for one last caller, James.
James,
yes,
on the line. Hey, James.
Hi, how are you guys?
How's it going? We're doing great.
Good. I have a perfect theory about memory, and I know this is probably the end of the show, but I'm actually writing a book about it. So just one for the time's sake, I would say the memory, as it is known, is probably, in my theory, a file that is in our soul, not the memory or the mind, to my book sake, is the soul referred to by man as mind, where all the database of our life story
is
stored.
So, James, just to make sure I understand, you're saying that memory is like a file that is full.
No, the soul, your soul.
Oh, okay.
You are a spirit, you have a soul, and you live in a physical body.
Uh-huh.
The soul is where all your database is stored of who you are from day one to today.
Right.
So because we, from scale 1 to 100, we use 1% of brain power, it is unlikely that we'd be able to download the file that has all the information from day one. So in my book's sake, for whatever time's sake, I'm just saying it's great to talk about memory, because we will have the rest of our life to wonder how our memory is stored. So, for gentlemen, what you said, I really wanted to commend you for bringing these topics up. But for whatever I want to say, we remember things just because the download of our file is too slow. 1% is too small to download a big file.
Well, James,
that's
let
why
me
we
ask.
We cannot remember everything we have.
You know, real quick, James, I'm wondering what was it that inspired and motivated you to, you know, take on the project of writing a book about memory?
Okay, it is a long story. That's why I'm writing the book. The book is called actually "We're Here to Stay."
We're here to stay.
We are here to stay.
Okay.
Okay. This might be considered as a conspiracy theory, but it's something to, I call it food for thought.
All right. Okay. Well, hey, James,
human
keep us posted.
Human being is engineered as a spirit. He has a soul, and he lives a mortal body. So the soul is as what you refer to as a mind. And within our soul is all our life story stored. It is unlikely that you remember who you used to be billion years ago. People call that a reincarnation theory.
Yeah,
so
well, you know, we gotta make
it
a decision.
We are not passing through this life.
You know,
our home to stay, and that is a big subject to undertake in 5 minutes.
Thank you, James.
So I'm very excited to talk to you, gentlemen.
I appreciate the call. Listen, send us a copy of the book here at the DeMel Center when you finished it. We'll take a look at it. We want to thank you very much for the call. And it's true, you know, we will wind up having to make calls and decisions about memory, and right? So we can't necessarily retain every single memory. So sometimes we have to prioritize remembering the important things, right?
Yeah.
And maybe you're going to forget the name of someone that you were vaguely, loosely associated with 10 years back. And, you know, that person's name sort of slips away into the ether because you're making room for new important memories that you need in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, and actually, referring to what James was talking about, the location of memories, I've always wondered, do they exist physically? You know, is it in the soul, if there is one, you know, or is it something that's just brain, like electricity, or does it have a physical form? Does your brain get heavier when you have more memories? You know, maybe just like a minuscule amount. And MIT actually did a study on the location of memories, and they do exist in individual neurons, meaning microscopic levels. These memories exist on a tiny, 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 tiny scale.
So multiple memories could fit on one neuron? Or each neuron carries?
They each have their own neuron, I guess. I don't have a total understanding of this, but they exist in small, tiny neuron cells in your brain. And by triggering a small cluster of neurons, researchers are able to force a mouse, at right now they're using mice, to recall a certain memory or perhaps remove it. And I know if anybody's seen the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, right.
It's all about, you know, erasing. It's this sort of sci-fi future or modern day movie about a company who deletes memories from people who want to get rid of their memories. And
would you do that?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder, because I know if I say I want to remove a memory from my mind, it's pretty hard. Usually when you focus on it, it just becomes more of a memory, something that I have. And I think...
I would remove all memories of what a cigarette tastes and feels like.
Right. I feel like it would be very specific to something maybe that you really don't want to do in your own life. But in general, I'm pretty happy with even the bad experiences that have happened to me have shaped me in the way that I am now, which I am very happy with. So I feel like I wouldn't want to throw away any memories. Just I don't know how that might affect me as Julian. And as we come to the end of our program today, thank you for tuning in, everybody. And thank you for everybody for calling. And
yeah, great calls today.
Bringing your confabulation stories. And this is The Positive Mind you've been listening to here on WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm Julian Joiello.
I'm Ben Starr. Send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. You can subscribe to the podcast. If you can't listen live on the radio, you can find us on iTunes Podcast on the iTunes Store, and it's 100% free. You don't have to pay a dime. You can download the podcasted episodes. Will show up automatically on your computer once you subscribe. So once again, our email here is positivemind@wbai.org. Thanks to everyone for listening. Julian, always a pleasure working with you, my friend.
Absolutely. And it's Berenstain. Berenstain,
right. The Berenstain Bears.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Take care.
And you have memories of where she wouldn't give it to you or where she denied it to you and stuff like that. And so you spend your life remembering the pain of that, the pain of the rejection.